Tonight, we discuss in-depth Transformers photography. This is Geek Existence Transformers.
Now, all we need is a little Energon and a lot of luck.
So welcome to Geek Existence Transformers.
I be your host, Peg Fearful, and with me be...
Suki Grabbit and Calibatron.
I was going to say, I remember when I first got into collecting.
Predacons, terrorize!
Hey everybody, this is Greg Berger.
And me, Grimlock!
And you're listening to Geek Existence Transformers.
Hello everyone, and welcome to episode number 31 of Geek Existence Transformers, recorded July 7th, 2011. Your hosts for this episode are yours truly, Weird Wolf, along with Insane Galvatron.
Hello everybody.
Joining us again this week is TFW Photostaff personality Tyler, a.k.a. TFR Cool.
Hello.
And also joining us from Radio Free Cybertron, XV.
Yo.
XV, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you come about in Transformers collecting? What's your favorite stuff and all that jazz?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah.
You just like
it. Likes it a lot.
Like it a lot.
Robots are cool.
They are cool.
Yeah.
And I've of course, to bring over a phrase from your other podcast, your mom collects Transformers, right?
Well, I don't think you should say such nice things about someone's mother like that. No, I mean, I've been collecting Transformers for so long, it's not really a matter of how did I come in to be collecting, you know. I just kind of am.
Just kind of am.
Yeah.
Did you ever, like, stop after, like, G1, or did you just...
Well, I came in at G2, just because of my age. The only time I really stopped was, between 2007 and 2008, because the first movie toy line didn't appeal to me at all, and I didn't really get back into it seriously until Animated started.
Animated. You know, I think that brought a lot of people back in, simply with the storytelling of the television show. I mean, I know the aesthetic of the toys didn't appeal to everyone. I know Insane Galvatron didn't care for them, but I thought they were pretty ingenious for representations of the cartoon.
Well, now, in my defense, I liked the engineering that they had. I just didn't care for the aesthetic. I didn't like the way they looked.
I think you're spot on with the show having a lot to do with people being appealed toward animated. For me, the toys were more like a fun novelty, but once that part wore off, I kind of lost interest in collecting the toys. But by that time, there was plenty of the Universe toys, which I didn't miss a beat on that.
Yeah, there's some great stuff in the Universe line in them. I'm hoping that there's some new stuff unveiled at San Diego Comic-Con coming up at the end of this month. That's got me kind of excited. I know that BotCon was a little bit lacking in Transformer news.
At this point, I'd say more than anything, I'm a classics collector.
Yeah, yes. I agree with you. I mean, that's my primary line for collecting right now, is because they're still somewhat affordable, but... Even if you're collecting the old ones, and hopefully if you can keep up with the new ones, I know Scourge and Retgar have been nearly impossible to find.
The two Retgars on my shelf disagree with you, but okay.
Well, I mean, it depends on your subject.
I only found one I only found one Scourge throughout my entire couple months of looking for that guy.
I have five Scourges and three Retgars.
I never saw a Retgar on shelf.
I never saw anything later. I guess since Scourge was packed with Cup, but I never saw anything later than that wave.
Yeah. I got most of my stuff from Hasbro Toy Shop. I think two of my Scourges I got in store. Everything else came from HTS.
Yeah, I got my first Scourge from Hasbro Toy Shop along with a load of other stuff from around that same period. But my second Scourge I got just at Walmart in town. There's still some there even now.
Wow. The area around here, if you go into any Walmart, Target, Meijer really is pretty much naked everywhere you go. But if you go into any of the department stores or even Toys R Us, if you find any generations at all, I guarantee you'll find a Thunderwing,
right,
a War for Cybertron, Soundwave, Megatron,
Skullgren,
Dirge, or Red Alert.
What about a Blur? I see a lot of Blurs.
Yeah, Blur every now and then.
Yeah, at my Walmart, they didn't really stock up on anything but movie toys, so we never got any of the latest waves of Generations or Reveal the Shield. We didn't even get the last waves of Hunt for Decepticons, but there are a few left from Generations, and all they are Skullgren. I might pick up the Dirge, but...
Yeah. I'll tell you what I had a lot of success finding just locally in my town was Warpath and Wheeljack.
That doesn't help.
Yeah, I never saw a Warpath in store. I haven't seen a Wheeljack in store. I only saw one Perceptor in store, and I bought it. And I think that's it.
I love that guy.
I saw Scourge and Cup a couple times.
I've seen half a dozen Warpaths.
Well, why don't you buy them all and then just turn them around for like $30?
Yeah, you probably could at this point.
Actually, I bought them all and passed them on at cost to people who needed them.
He's
way to be
a
bro.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's my karma moment for the year.
Half of today's podcasters are scalpers. Can you guess which ones?
One of these things is not like the other.
Well, no, I'll admit there's times when I will buy an extra of something that I know is going to increase in value in the short term and probably turn it around for a profit. I'm not perfect. Don't judge me.
Your mom.
I've done it. I actually picked up when Marshalls had all those Universe Hardheads showing up, the Walmart exclusive Ultras. I picked up like three or four Hardheads, and I used them as trade bait.
Yeah, by the time I was able to get to one of those stores to look, most of them had been bought up. I was able to get like the last one around, which of course stayed with me.
Well, I ended up trading one of the Hardheads to a guy over in the UK for two Wind Chargers.
Oh, good deal.
I personally don't see a problem with using them as trade bait. I mean, you're helping somebody else.
Trade bait and, you know, selling them for cash is a little bit of a different animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even selling them for cash, I don't see a problem. The only time I see a problem with it is if it's on the shelf and it's hard to find and you turn around and sell it for an exuberant amount of money. You know, that's scalping. Personally, I don't see going and getting it. And if you make, you know, if you ask somebody to pay you $5-$10, you know, because like for me, if I find anything new, it's normally in Lexington, which is about 25-30 miles away from me. You know, so, you know, help me with my gas, you know, to go get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't see a problem with that.
But no, I wouldn't even call that scalping at all.
No. But I mean, if I was saying, you know, give me $30 and I'll go get it for you, no, that's scalping. You know, I mean,
right.
I think the difference between being an opportunist and being a scalper is if your purchases are the reason it's hard to find. The reason nobody can find it is because all the scalpers are buying it up, and that's scalping.
Yeah.
If it's already rare and you just happen to look across a couple and pick them both up, I don't really consider that scalping.
The first G1 commemorative series reissues, like Prime, Magnus, yeah.
Yeah, they were Toys R Us exclusive, and the employees were taking them out the back door. That's scalping.
Yeah, that's definitely scalping.
Yeah,
that's... If you're buying it with the express intention of selling it up sooner or later, then yeah, I would call that scalping more than not.
Well, I know back whenever the Prime and the Magnus were on the shelf, our local Toys R Us in Lexington, there was at one time you could go to eBay and see like 15 or 20 of them online on eBay for sale for a huge amount of money, and the item location, Lexington, Kentucky.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, TJ Duckett, welcome to Geek Existence Transformers. You want to kind of introduce yourself real quick before we move right on?
All right, very cool. Yeah, my name's TJ Duckett. I started collecting around last December, so pretty new to it all, but obviously I've gotten into the customizing, the photography, things like that, and, you know, great group of guys. I'm glad to be a part of it and continue to learn, you know?
Yeah, awesome. You do take some really great photos in the Cool Stuff thread on TFW 2005, and I think it is notable to people that are listening. Go to that thread, check it out. You're probably one of the top posters on there as far as really great photos.
Well, what's really amazing, if you want to weed through thousands of pages, because the thread is massive, TJ, when he first started, you know, he was just kind of like a point and click, and then people gave advice, he listened, and I've noticed a significant improvement from when he first started posting that thread until now.
Yeah, the way TJ has assimilated all of the knowledge in that thread in such a short time is just downright amazing to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys.
Congratulations
Absolutely.
On that part.
Welcome to Geek Existence Transformers. XV, you also have your own website. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah. Pretty much the form of my online fandom since around the time I started has been to do toy reviews and photography. And what I'm currently working on now is at figurereviews.com. Figure reviews is all one word. And me and my friend RAC, who is on New Soundwave, the other podcast I work on, we do Transformers, we've done Gundams, some Power Rangers. We just do a little bit of anything that's of interest to us. And among other things, that's been like the main motivation for me to continue improving my photographic skills.
Which is why we're here tonight.
Yeah, and just today, RAC uploaded a review and gallery for the Voyager Megatron from Dark of the Moon, so go check that out.
Awesome. What's the web address?
It's at figurereviews.com.
All right. Check out figurereviews.com, everybody. Transformers photography, it's becoming pretty huge. If you go to the large Transformers websites such as the AllSpark and TFW 2005, some of your most active threads, or a couple of your most active threads on those forums, happen to be the Let's See Some Cool Stuff threads, and you know, threads similar to that. I know the name of the thread changes constantly on the AllSpark.
Yeah, take pictures of your insert object here.
Yeah, that's
your
what
mom.
She said. But,
nice.
The pictures that you find in these threads can tend to be downright amazing. And I have to say, from a personal perspective, a couple people that take some really good photos we have as guests tonight, XV and TFR Cool, has been taking a lot of great photos. TJ Duckett, he also takes some really good photos. What are your guys' secrets that you would like to share with the audience for your picture-taking skills? We'll start with you, TF.
My secrets. Let's see. Well, I would recommend using a tripod, although that's not a must. Usually when you're taking a photo, unless your lights are brighter than that of the sun, you usually have a relatively slow shutter speed. And even if your camera has like image stabilization, any sort of moving part inside that tries to stabilize the image, even at like a sixth of a second, you're going to have blur, and so you're not going to have the sharpest of images when you introduce any sort of blur into the photos. So a tripod and a timer are quite invaluable in photography.
Yeah, I agree personally. That's I use a GorillaPod myself, and whenever I take photos, I always use at least a 12-second countdown timer, because whenever you set the timer and you move your hand away from it, you know, sometimes you can kind of tend to, you know, jostle the camera on the tripod, and you give your camera just a little bit of time to stop wobbling, and whenever it does finally take the photo, it is as still as it's going to get.
I'm actually a little fancier than that. I've got an infrared remote control for my camera, so I can go and actually sit down away from the camera and press the shutter button. And then I'm not even near the camera, so little movements won't vibrate or anything, and I don't have to wait for the timer to always go off.
Yeah, and see, I haven't bought a cable release or remote yet. I know a lot of places they're cheap. I could probably even find one at Radio Shack if I had to. Another useful thing if you're going after your sharpest image, if you have a camera with a mirror in it, like a DSLR camera, like some people use, it's good to set shutter delay, which actually it opens up the mirror first, and then a few seconds later, about maybe a second later, it actually opens up the so where the shutter takes in light, so even the tiny slap of the mirror doesn't cause any vibrations inside your computer or inside your camera.
Right.
TJ, do you want to tell us a little bit about yours?
Well, basically, if you guys want to check out the Cool Stuff thread to go along with this, I'll post some pictures of my setup later. Mine's actually made out of a cardboard box. Just cut some squares into each side and the top, put a white sheet on top of it, three lights, top light, two sides, and, you know, pretty much just go from there.
What's the wattage on your light?
I normally go with 60, but if I want to get a really white picture, especially if I'm doing white on white, I'll change it out to a 100 because I have to put the lights behind the figure to make it offset a little bit more and still get some of the figure too.
That's something I'd like to talk about. A lot of people have trouble if they're trying to go for a pure white background. Even the guys on even in the TFW galleries, you know, which are very well done on the figures that are all white, you know, any Generations Jazz, Animated Jazz, all those white figures, you'll see that the backgrounds aren't perfectly white. They're actually gray, so you can see the detail in the figure, because white on white is quite hard to do, because
very
usually
difficult.
Your
it's probably the hardest thing to do, really.
Yeah. Usually your background is the same color, if not darker, than your subject that you're shooting. And a tip is, on any white photography, there are three ways you want to measure your light. You want to measure the light on the subject. So basically, a camera meters for the light however you tell it to. In manual mode, it meters exactly how you tell it to, whatever. In any other mode, You can put the camera on your subject, and depends, like if you have a DSLR with certain focus points, you can change the focus points, but you can meter for your subject, and it'll give you a certain reading, like, you know, 1/6 of a second at f3.5. Then what you want to do is you want to make sure your background's actually brighter, and so your camera wants to take a longer shutter, a longer time to capture the detail. And then if you're really getting into it, if you're doing, like, people or anything like that, I know this is definitely Transformers, but you don't want light to spill over, because, you know, certain figures have, like, gray pieces on them, like Teradive. Teradive was a problem because his shoulders had gray bits and they would wash out in the white. You want to make sure not too much light is bouncing off the background and spilling over on your figure.
Excellent.
Yeah. So to do white on white, it's easy if you angle your lights so where they're basically really just pointing at the background and keep your figure ahead of it, and it'll create, basically you can shoot white on pure white and it looks very good. I posted a couple pictures of Jazz in the Cool Stuff thread, and you can check those out.
XV, do you want to tell us a little bit about your techniques?
My technique involves hundreds of hours of labor.
Do you use a lot of unpaid labor, like child labor, like they do in China?
Well, it's unpaid labor in as much as I'm not making anything off of it. So, yes, I'm running a sweatshop of one for myself here. Anytime I make any kind of changes to my lighting setup, even as little as changing the wattage of a light bulb, I have to spend a lot of time then to calibrate everything again to make the pictures come out like I want to, because my method is to do as little as I have to in post-processing. I want the pictures to come out of the camera the way that I see the toy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a trade-off for a lot of work beforehand, but once everything's dialed in the right way, It goes a lot faster than having to take the pictures and then tune up the levels and everything in Photoshop afterward.
Yeah, that seems to be one of my biggest problems is having to... well, I don't do it as much. Now, whenever I first started photography of my figures back in the... way back in, what, January? way back in January. I had to do an exceptional amount of post-editing in my photo editors. I was on Windows before I switched over to Mac, and I was having to use Fireworks to edit my photos. And sometimes they just didn't come out quite the way I wanted. I was trying for the infinite white, as we were as TFR was just talking about. And, I mean, I had some limited success, but... going back and looking at it now, I'm like, wow, these pictures are really, really crap. But, you know, it's a learning process. And
oh, it totally is a learning process, yeah.
Yeah. I know that...
I still don't have all the fancy equipment you guys do. I've built my own light box, but I've been just using my phone with a 8-megapixel camera. And I haven't been taking a lot of pictures as of late, but I've learned a lot from just watching you guys learn. And like TJ, I've just been kind of absorbing what's in the thread,
yeah.
And I've noticed just making a few simple adjustments on the settings with the phone camera, it actually takes some pretty decent photos.
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish.
I was saying my pictures look a lot better since I learned what the different adjustments do, because I had everything just set on auto before. But once I learned about all the different things you can adjust in the different settings, which number, you know, higher settings, lower settings, depending on whether you're trying to get, you know, infinite black or infinite white background. And just putting those things into effect, even without the fancy DSLR cameras, just using the 8-megapixel, you know, camera on my phone, it takes pretty decent pictures. So technique has a lot to do with it. I mean, obviously, better equipment's going to get you a better result. But if you can't really afford to upgrade your equipment, you can still take better pictures if you just learn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I've been really surprised to see like pictures people take with their iPhones, how sharp they are, how clear and bright. I mean, you'd never know that the phone in a camera. Camera or a camera and a phone.
Well,
I'd like
a
phone in my camera.
Yeah, the camera phones are getting better and better and better. I mean, if you use a camera phone from say 2 years ago, you're not going to get as quite as good a picture as you would with a modern camera and a modern phone. I know I've got a Droid Thunderbolt. And it's got an 8-megapixel camera, much like Insane Galvatron's Droid X. And it does take some good photos. There has been a few photos that I've posted in the Cool Stuff thread that I actually took with my Thunderbolt. And, I never said anything to anybody, but, you know, and a couple of them got some great responses. And I'm like, well, little did they know that I took it with a phone camera. You know,
yeah.
So, I mean,
it really doesn't matter your equipment. Really, a lot of people are taking really great pictures with phone cameras. If you guys are familiar with T-Cracker on the Cool Stuff thread, all his photos are taken with a phone camera on like an iPhone 2 or 3G, and then his background is just a hoodie.
Or a black T-shirt.
Yeah.
And he does.
That cracks me up.
Yeah, he's another one that takes some really fantastic pictures. Now, we did say, though, that, you know, phone cameras, they do take some good pictures. But if you really want to get a good quality picture, stay away from the phone camera. Don't use it as a crutch. I mean, I see a lot of people say, sorry for the crappy pic. I took it with my phone camera. It's a crutch a lot of people use, but I mean they can take great photos, but they're not the best. Now let's talk a little bit about cameras. TJ, what's your suggestion for a camera?
Not mine. I mean, I'm at the point where I don't really feel, you know, that I have a camera that's at a level. I use a Fujifilm Finepix Z5, and it's just a basic point-and-shoot camera. You know, I do what I can, but it was XV earlier that said, you know, you're pretty much at the point where you're bleeding a rock, you know. Yeah, yeah. There's not too much left that I can do with this, and that's why I'm looking to upgrade pretty soon myself. So yeah.
Once I get a decent camera, 5100.
Oh yeah, that's definitely what I'm going for. I'm torn either between the 5100 and the 3100.
Now, what are the features of the 5100? What makes it stand out?
Go ahead, Tifa.
All right. The 5100 versus the 3100, for the price, they're both good cameras. They're about $100 to $200 apart where you go. They run about $600 to $800, 3100 being on the 6 side and the 5100 being on the 800 side. Honestly, the 5100 would probably be the best as overall resolution. It's about 16 megapixels, but the thing is, that may not seem like a lot because a lot of cameras these days are pushing 20, but megapixels is not just a thing to just one looking at a camera. When you're in low light, if you ever get grainy images on your camera phone or your point and shoot on auto, it's because of the ISO, and the Nikon D5100 can eat ISO like a monster, and so you can get some very nice, you know, clear shots. But overall, the extra resolution helps, and then just as a daily camera, it really helps us with the better sensor.
That brings another question to me. What exactly is ISO? Can anybody answer that?
It is the International Standard of Organization. That's just a name, but it's the speed of which it captures light, basically, how sensitive the sensor is to light.
Yeah, and back in the days of film cameras, that was referred to as the speed of the film.
Yeah.
In digital cameras, it's a little different because it's how much the camera is amplifying the light that it can take in while the shutter is open to bright picture up.
Yeah.
And the more it has to enhance it, the grainier the image becomes.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is the ISO is like a golf score. The lower, the better.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, very much.
So, if say, for example, I have an Olympus SP800UZ. I gave about $300 for it at Meijer, and it's a 14-megapixel camera, and the lowest ISO setting on it was 50.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most of my all of my Transformer pictures I take now are with the 50 ISO. Now, whenever I first got the camera, I didn't quite understand the ISO was that important. I do now, but, you know, I figured, you know, the higher the better. So I set it on its highest setting, which I think is around 1500, and I took I'm trying to get on the photo staff at TFW, and I took a gallery of Side Reverse Commander Sentinel Prime. And the pictures, they look good, but, you know, whenever you crop them and everything, they still look pretty grainy. And I never could figure that out. I figure, well, maybe it's just the noise in it, and I'd go back and adjust it, and you could still kind of see it. And I couldn't understand why it was like that. And now that, you know, I got to talking to some of you guys in the photography group on the board, and just reading and doing a little investigative work about it, I understood that, well, I had my ISO set too high. Now that I've got it set down to 50, the pictures come out like crystal sharp. But is, you know, like the camera that TJ wants, what's the lowest ISO setting for it? Do you know?
The 3100 and the 5100 both go down to a minimum of ISO 100.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was just checking my Droid X while you were talking about the ISO, because there was another thing I remember you saying, the lower the better, and I had already set it down, but I didn't know what the number was. It, believe it or not, for a phone camera, it goes down to 100.
Yeah.
And see, like on like a smaller camera size, because like the DSLRs, they aren't just big to be big, because they have like a larger light gathering sensor. A phone camera, you know, a phone is very small, so the sensor is also quite small. And so, you know, if you had, you know, a DSLR camera versus a phone camera, both the same megapixel, but if you put them both at like ISO 800, A DSLR image may, you know, the image from one of those cameras may come out, you know, relatively clean without much noticeable grain until you crop it, and the phone image may just come out like completely just grainy.
Mm-hmm. Just because of the different lens size.
Well, the different sensor size in it, because the smaller sensors are not as good as, you know, controlling the grain at which the ISO is, and, you know, they're small and they can't let in as much, have much light hit them as a bigger sensor can.
That's really the major difference between a DSLR and a point-and-shoot camera. It's the size of the photo sensor in it.
Yeah.
That's how you get your... like, you've seen photos where the background is very blurry while the subject is very crisp.
Yes.
That's basically due to the sensor being so big. It's the way it takes in the light that it can do that.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, another thing, if you're shooting with the DSLR, a lot of... If you want an artistic image of, like, something shooting a gun and you want just the gun to be in focus, you can do that quite well. But if you're going to, like, since I'm doing the galleries, can't have too much of the artsy stuff. It's more of display the transformer as it is. So you're going to have to increase the aperture number, which actually decreases the hole that the light actually comes through. And it will actually make it everything a little bit more clear in focus.
A lot of these terms you guys are using are going even way over my head. But
the
aperture
is actually kind of easy when you stop and look at it a little bit. It's the F number in your camera.
Mm-hmm.
So an aperture of, say, 2.8, F2.8, the aperture will be open very wide, where if you got up 16, 18, 20, it's going to be basically a pinpoint. What this most importantly does is changes the depth of focus you get in your photo. At 2.8, you'll have literally millimeters where there's focus, but at a higher number and a smaller aperture, you can get several inches of in focus all at the same time.
Yeah.
The trade-off, though, is being a little pinpoint like that, there's a lot less light coming in, so you have to either up your ISO or take a longer exposure, and it's all a balancing act.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going after those nice, like, I'll use a quote from one of my favorite camera reviewers, a nice bokelicious background, and bokeh is Japanese for out of focus, and how a camera renders the out-of-focus elements in a picture, but you aren't going to be able to get that with a point-and-shoot, because even if your aperture goes to, you know, f1.4, or, you know, some cameras these days, like, small cameras have apertures of, like, f0.95, and really, it's just a stretch of the numbers. They're trying to sell it with numbers, and you just can't get that out of focus.
I'm looking at my camera now on the Olympus SP800, and I'm trying to figure out. I guess it doesn't have an aperture setting. The only thing, it says AF mode, whatever that means.
Yeah, that's just the out of focus. But I looked at the specs on your camera, and your camera doesn't have an aperture priority or a shutter priority or a manual, but go to where you have plus 2.0
mm-hmm.
on your camera, bump that down, and you'll see a couple numbers change. One is 1 over something, and that's going to be your shutter speed, and the other is going to be F whatever, and that's going to be your aperture.
Bump it down.
Yeah, just like 0 or 2.0.
Okay, I've got...
You can see some numbers changing.
Let's see here. Well, yeah, it just changes. I've got it at plus 2.0 and then plus 1.7. And it shows me an example of what the darkness of the photo.
Yeah, and just a quick general photo thing. This doesn't really apply to transformers too much, but it's the aperture number itself is actually the focal length divided by the opening. So if you have a focal length of, like, say, A good lens out there is the 70-200 2.8. It's a workhorse lens and like the medium whatnot, but 200 at f/2.8 means that the opening is going to be the size of 200 millimeters divided by 2.8 millimeters, and that's going to be the opening of your aperture. And that's
is why, hard.
Yeah, yes. That's why the smaller. The larger aperture numbers are actually small opening, and the smaller ones are larger.
It's just like fractions.
Yeah.
Going back to the ISO thing briefly, I think I'm the only one among the group right now who's actually using a DSLR camera. And
no, I'm
like,
here.
Oh, that's right. You have one too. Don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But mine's like 5 years old, and the ISO on that only goes down to 200.
Yeah.
I mean, it surprises me that the point-and-shoots are actually getting down lower than what you're finding on average with modern DSLRs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of point-and-shoots do that, and also, like, with the aperture thing, that's just kind of a stretch of numbers, because, like, an 80 ISO image or a 50 off of a camera like that, I mean, really, the difference between the two, if it was just down to how much grain there was in the photos, wouldn't be much at all, because usually the lowest setting is pretty much like no grain.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm getting great clarity and no real grain with ISO 200, all the same as people who have even newer cameras do.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it's really not enhancing much at all, is it?
No, I mean, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the type of setup that we have. I mean, that we take our photos with. You mentioned, I think it was T-Cracker. He takes his photos on the back of a hoodie.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, really, honestly, whatever works, works. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you're hero. Looking at the close-up of a figure sitting on a backdrop. It doesn't matter if it's a T-shirt, a blanket, or... believe it or not, I've actually used the back of an aluminum for sale sign for some of mine.
Yeah, I remember seeing you mention that, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it really doesn't matter. I mean, you can get some really nice results. TJ, yeah. What's your setup like?
Well, I told
beside,
you.
Yeah, the cardboard box, but...
normally just reflective poster board if I want to do the white backgrounds, and then there was some like a black foam that I bought from Hobby Lobby, and that's really cool because it's not very reflective. It'll still catch light, but you really have to point the light at it for it to do it for the infinite black backgrounds and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody actually told me that Hancock Fabric sells this it's velvet black fabric.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard of the black velvet trick before.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was thinking about doing that, but other than that, it's pretty much white, black, and then I have just a generic, you know, gray speckled background that I used when I first started doing them.
Yeah.
So nothing too crazy.
What about you, TFR Cool?
Yeah.
I know you employ a technique that's rather unorthodox.
Yeah, it's called... aluminum foil, and it's premium. It's made by this wonderful company that's called Reynolds. I do believe they were possibly based in England for a little while. I'm not totally sure on the history of them, but you know they go back.
Well, so that English stuff, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
Mm.
I use a cardboard box, and the thing is, I needed a cardboard box that was large because my first one could barely fit a deluxe figure in it, and this cardboard box was the width and the length, they were nice, and how tall it was, it could hold a good sized figure. But the thing was, it was so shallow. So basically what I did, I took the actual flaps and I duct taped them pointing out. So I had to cut from that. So it took a while to cut through that, and it's not very structurally sound because it's on one of the flaps, and so it bends whenever you touch it. But I took some old sewing sheets that my grandmother had in her house. I draped them over it, and I put a white background in. And recently, I just put some tinfoil on the top bit because I no longer point diffuse light from the top. I just take a light, stick it upside down, and point it at the tinfoil, and it basically fills in all the shadows because of the reflectivity and how, you know, different angles the crinkled tinfoil covers.
Well, that, and it protects your toys from being mind read by the government satellites.
Yeah.
Or alien visitors that are trying to read their minds.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were supposed to make a hat out of it.
Well, sticking it in a light box usually does the trick, too.
Yeah. That's basically like a little roof. If you lined your ceiling with aluminum foil, I'm sure it'd do the same thing as having a hat.
Yeah, yeah. Just not as portable.
I have to go buy aluminum foil now.
Besides, don't you know a polite person removes their hat when they go inside a house?
Yeah. And
not when they're listening.
Tip. Don't use aluminum foil if you're trying to do an infinite black background, because it bounces off of everything.
Yeah. Well, and the way I do it, especially, my trick for doing the infinite black is I went to Michael's and found these sheets of gloss finish black cardstock. And what I found was, as long as the light is not pointing anywhere toward them, in the photo, they're completely black. I mean, there's no reflectivity off of them at all, as long as there's not a direct light source against them. So yeah. I can angle my lights so they're pointed in just enough to light up the figure, but not enough to cast on the background. Mm-hmm. And it's tricky. That's another one of those things where I gotta dial it in every time I move something. But
to be honest, I think infinite black is the most difficult thing you can do.
It's extremely hard, I will tell you that. I mean, I was not kidding before when I said that there's hundreds of hours that go into setting things up before I can get it exactly how I want it to work. And yeah. Even when I started going back to the infinite black, I switched my backgrounds around periodically. When I went back to it this time, I mean, there was weeks where I could not get the pictures to come out the way that I had been able to in the past, and that I knew I should be able to again now. And, I mean, it was just a matter of having to make the tiniest little adjustments until it all comes together again.
Mm-hmm. I remember you getting annoyed by that, but, I mean, they looked good. They looked perfect until you mentioned what was actually wrong with them, and then if you look closely, you could actually tell. And I definitely get that. Yeah, I totally get that because, you know, if I'm viewing a picture and I'm like, you know, this corner, it's a little bit dark than what I, you know, intended it to, or this, you know, this little bit that's not getting light, or this bit in the very back of the figure that no one's ever going to see is a little bit overexposed, I'm not going to use that picture.
There is one other way to do infinite black, which if you've got the facility to do it, it's probably a lot easier. Which is just a big dark room.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, I tried that out twice, but I forgot I had a transformer laying to the side and like a pencil and stuff, and I lit that and it looked weird.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a big dark room and the walls aren't too lightly colored, if you can just cast a couple lights on whatever you're trying to shoot, you'll do great, but, you know, I don't have a lot of space to work with, so I gotta do other tricks that make me have to spend hundreds of hours on photos of toys.
I've never actually tried to do the infinite background. I always just try to put a piece of black poster board, which usually ends up looking gray under the lighting, and just that way I've just got a neutral color background so that the figure gets the attention. I've never tried. I know the pictures look really nice when it looks like the figure's just floating in space, where everything's either white or black, but I really don't mind a background as long as it doesn't distract from the toy, as long as the toy is highly visible.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
There's not near as much headache because it's not as hard to get a good picture when you're not worried about blacking the background.
Yeah, just snap
or if you're just lazy and don't want to edit your photos.
Well, totally.
Yes, that too.
I mean, at point I've done, like he was talking about with the just a piece of black card where it looks like dark gray. I've done blue before. I even have a pinkish red card, but that tends to spill color onto the toy a little too much, so I don't really use that. I even got from a dollar store a checkerboard pattern shelf liner and made a floor for my photo setup out of that just for a little variety. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to spice up the backgrounds and not do the infinites, yeah. But I like the infinites because it looks clean around the figure. It's all uniform and everything, so yeah. All you're really paying attention to is the toy.
Yeah. Actually, something I want to see is this would be difficult to do without a little bit of post-processing, and it would also be difficult to do because you'd have a line in the middle, but I'd like to see if there was a place that sells like an alternating pattern of paper, one white and one black, and I'd like to see somebody nail getting, you know, the bottom of the thing black and the back of it pure white. I'd like to see somebody try to nail that.
To where it looks like it's floating on blackness, but there's whiteness behind it.
Yeah.
That would be a trick.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be very difficult. But
now XV, what exactly do you use to diffuse the light? I know...
I don't, actually.
You don't?
On the black background, I've got four utility clamp lights with the silver reflector dishes around them, and I just point them outward enough so that none of it's spilling back onto the background, and it's basically diffusing itself. There's no direct light onto the figure that way. It's just kind of the radiance from the room getting back on the toy. When I do the infinite white, I used to have a sheet that I would drape over the sides and clamp the lights on the outside of those. But the last time I did the infinite white, I actually just kind of skipped that altogether and was pointing the light straight at the background, where I don't really mm-hmm. want it diffused that way. The only downside I found to that was that the foreground was shadowed pretty badly, which is when I got the extra two lamps and lower wattage bulbs to stick in the front and fill in the foreground far enough ahead that it doesn't wash out the figure at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, my solution to things is to just add more on.
Kind just of the add way more I lights, dinner. Yeah. Kind of flood
or,
the
more
area
light,
with light.
Or
yeah.
whatever, it doesn't matter. If there's a problem, just do more.
Yeah. My solution to things is to spend no money, or at least not your own money.
Spending not your own money is a great solution for any problem. When
yeah,
you can,
yeah. yeah.
That's a good philosophy
I mean,
for life.
This box, the box, I just found it laying in a back room under like a bunch of other smaller boxes, and the sheet was just left over from some sewing stuff, and these sewing lamps, the only thing that... I have three of them. One is properly hinged so where I can stick it to one of my transformer shelves and move it around. But the other two, all the hinges are broken. And so basically it's a bunch of floppy metal with a wire, an electrical wire in the middle that have lights at the end. And so I just put them on random tables and stuff and hope they don't burn anything.
Hope they do not catch fire.
Yeah.
I kind of went opposite. What?
I actually have a couple marks from because I would try to put them as close as I can to make sure as much light was getting on it, but with it still being diffused, I have a couple burn spots on my background, on my diffusing sheet.
I kind of went in the opposite direction from the spend no money philosophy. Back when I built my first light tent, which I guess was around the middle of 2008, I did what was kind of in style then and got a bunch of PVC pipe and a hacksaw and built a cheap frame out of that. That cost me about $4. I used that up until March of this year. But I had known for a long time that I had vastly underestimated the volume I needed inside the light tent. And finally, I went and upgraded. I actually got... from Lowe's, they're metal strips that you screw into the wall and you can hang shelving units from. But what I did, I got a bunch of them and built a cube frame out of them that's now 2 feet tall by 20 wide by 20 deep. And it's no wider than what I had before, but the extra height is really helping out. It's giving me more room to let the light spread out inside too when I'm doing the white background. And
what size was the PVC one that you built?
I want to say that was about 15 inches tall. It was still 20 inches wide and maybe like 18 inches deep.
Mm-hmm.
The height, what?
I was gonna say, when I made mine, I just cut all the PVC pipes 2 feet long, so mine's 24 by 24 by 24.
Yeah, I mean, when I made the first one, I don't think I put enough thought into exactly how big of a thing I would end up needing to photograph in it. Because, like, with that one, it was a challenge even to get an ultra-sized transformer in that and not run into one of the edges.
Yeah. My first light box was, like, 8 inches, an 8-inch cube. I couldn't... I'd have to put tiny deluxes or scout figures in it.
Yeah. My metal frame now, where the first one cost me, like, $4, this one cost me about $40 to build. But on the other hand, it's big, it's metal, and it's pretty sturdy. I can clamp things to it, and it doesn't fall apart. That's a big selling point.
That is.
Oh, baby.
I kind of went the lazy man's way. I'm not very good with tools, so I couldn't construct one. So I went onto Amazon, and I looked for light tents. And I found one by Cowboy Studios. It's a fold-up light tent. I mean, you can actually fold it up and take it with you. The back of the light tent actually becomes a carrying case for this tent. And it's really nice. It comes with the proper kind of material you need to diffuse light with. It's much like, you know, those umbrellas that you see at professional photographers.
Yeah.
That kind of material. And it is 2 feet deep by 2 feet wide by 2 feet high. The downside of that particular set is that it does come with some different backdrops with a felt type covering to it, but it has pleats in it, and you cannot get those pleats out. I mean, I tried ironing one, and it just didn't look right.
Right.
But I went over to Hobby Lobby, and I went back to the cloth department, and I just started looking at different white and black cloths. And the lady working the department came up and asked me, you know, what can I do for you? And I told her that, well, I'm beginning to do some photography, and that's all I had to say. And she goes, okay, you're going to take photography. Do you have a light tent? I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm here. And she goes, okay. I have a lot of photographers that come in here and look for this kind of material. And she got me two pieces of cloth. They are made of 100% cotton. And this kind of material, the white reflects light really well. And the black does not have a reflective sheen to it. It's more of a matte black. So if you, like you were talking about before, if you aim the lights away from the black background, it doesn't reflect the light,
right?
So you can achieve an infinite black background, but like I said earlier, it is really difficult even with that to achieve the infinite black, simply because of the lighting of the figure. You can get too much light on it, and it looks like it's just a spotlight down on it.
Yeah.
And it illuminates the flooring around it, so it doesn't look like it's, like Greg said, floating in space.
Yeah, one thing I've found doing the infinite black is that the best you can really hope for with that is to get something that's reflective underneath the figure and go for the mirror finish for what it's standing on, at least. It's not going to exactly be floating in space anymore, but it's still going to be better than just having a white spot on the floor underneath it.
Yeah. That brings me to another topic, is the flooring that a lot of people use. Like I said earlier, one of the things that I use to get like a reflective metallic floor to my pictures is the backside of a aluminum for sale sign. And I like the effect that it has, because, you know, you're taking a photo of a Transformer, which is supposed to be a metal robot.
Right.
Even though they're made of plastic, but, you know, we know they're supposed to be made
of
metal.
Details,
yes. with the aluminum, it just adds to the effect of it, in my opinion. I don't use it all that often because it's kind of a dull gray, and I prefer the overall aesthetic pop that you would get from I use a pane of glass from a window from a picture frame. I shine it up with some window cleaner, and then use my can of compressed air to blow off any residual dust, and still don't get it all. But and I also have a cat too, so a cat dander gets all over everything. But you know, I really like the look that you get from the pane of glass, especially on Infinite Black. If you have light shining directly on the figure, and the light doesn't reflect off the glass itself, you get a perfect reflection of the figure itself, because the light was reflecting off the figure onto the glass, and it's. I took a picture of a bumblebee, the United Bumblebee, some time back, and it is like a perfect reflection of the car.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I like that.
I knew what I was going to say right up until that exact second.
Brain fart.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, we'll substitute that with one problem with using a pane of glass or even plexiglass is that at fairly close-up shots, you'll see a dual reflection in the glass because the light's not just reflecting off of the surface the figure is directly on, but it's also reflecting off the inside surface of the other side of the glass.
Yeah.
If you have that problem, one thing that you can do is to get the black Krylon Fusion spray paint, which will adhere directly to plastics in the case of plexiglass, and spray one side of it completely black. That tends to make that surface non-reflective anymore, even on the inner surface. I mean, if you think of the surface of a pane of glass as being two sides like it is, there's the outer reflection and inner reflection, and that seems to do away with both from the downside of the glass. And that would get you more of a mirror-like finish in that circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have remembered now what I was going to say in the first place. If you want to try to strengthen the reflection of your figure, what you can try to do is put two lights aiming upward toward the figure, which will increase the amount of light that's bouncing down onto your glass surface and then back out at the camera. That'll enhance the mirror effect. I'm actually kind of lucky in this case because the same gloss finish on my black that lets me do the Infinite Black also will somewhat do the
mirror effect.
It'll do the reflective effect on there too. Yeah. And like you were saying, like for the metallic effect that your for sale sign provides at Michael's, in addition to gloss black, they also sell gold and silver coated paper. It's like $6 per sheet, but it's another way to go for. Yeah, I know, but it's another way to go and try to get that same effect.
Yeah.
Alternately, you could probably stick a mirror down in there too, and that would work.
Yeah, be interesting, although don't break it.
How about you, TJ? Do you use any particular item in this area, like for the flooring, like a pane of glass or?
If I want a reflective one, I'll just use the glass from like a picture frame or something like that.
So that's pretty much the most common thing to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I do.
I tried doing that and I have done that, but unfortunately the picture frame I got, I found it and it was just like BotCon stuff that I bought. You know, I was going to put something in there, but it was the wrong size for any of the stuff I bought. It was just a piece of plastic, like a transparency you'd see on an overhead projector. But it works.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really take much to generate a reflection.
Yeah.
The only thing, like I was saying before, all you really have to worry about is if you're getting too close up on the figure, the double reflection is going to be really obvious on it. But if that doesn't bother you, like Sydney on the on 2005, he'll do the painted glass flooring too. And I know he said in the past that he sees the double reflection, but it doesn't really matter to him because he's still getting the overall effect he's wanting. It's just a matter of how perfectionist you are, because that would drive me absolutely nuts.
Go ahead. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt TJ a few minutes ago. I mean, I just wanted to add a little comment, and I cut him off.
Yeah, sorry about that.
All right, no problem.
But, well, go ahead. I mean,
No, to be honest with you, you were asking about what I do for a reflective ground or whatever. That was pretty much it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are tips that I got from you guys over in the thread, so thank you, but no, I was through.
And it's definitely interesting to see what progress you've made, and now I remember for quite a while there that you were, you know, you before you even started, you know, getting from that thread, like everybody giving you tips, you know, you came in with such an enthusiasm. That thread was kind of, I mean, it was still there, but it was kind of poking along. You definitely helped pick that up to where, you know, on most days I'd come home and there'd be about 6 pages with 25 posts per page of new images.
Yeah, really?
Okay, listen, we're getting a little bit long on the subject, but that's fine. Some great input here. Hopefully the listeners are enjoying it. Let's quickly do some do's and don'ts in your photo taking. Actually, we've been talking about nothing but do's. Let's talk about don'ts. What's the number one don't that you would say in your mind that you should not do when you're photoing?
Don't turn your
thumb over the lens.
Yeah.
Okay, that too. But don't turn your ISO up. There's other ways to make your picture brighter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, don't put too much light on the figure, counterintuitively as it may be. If you put too much light on the figure, you're going to confuse the camera and it's going to make the pictures fuzzy. Hmm. I have found through experience, believe me.
How about you, TJ? What's your number one don't?
A big one that I got as a tip from you guys, I know it sounds silly, but not holding the camera with your hand and using the timer.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought, you know, well, I'm pretty steady-handed, you know, I can take a picture with my hands. Whenever I first started posting pictures in the Cool Stuff thread, I didn't have any kind of tripod at all. And I was taking them just free-handed. And you could tell that there was a little bit of blur around the edge of some of the figures. And I honestly don't know if that's just my camera settings or if it was just me thinking I was being steady-handed. Then I tried putting the camera on a flat surface and then taking the picture. Well, that really didn't work either because, you know, I mean, I still have my hand on the camera. But, you know, tripods, Gorilla Pods. I set my Gorilla Pod on a lap desk, literally right in front of my light box. So, you know, I mean, it helps. It helps tremendously. A lot of people. I think it's underrated. I think a tripod, if you're trying to do any kind of pictures, should be one of the number one things you buy.
A good rule of thumb is that if your shutter speed is less than 1/50th of a second. Or, well, if the fraction is smaller than 1/50th of a second, meaning that it's longer than that, we're back to how it's confusing again. But if it's less than that, you probably cannot handhold the camera because the shutter will not move fast enough to trim out any hand tremors. And I don't care how steady-handed you think you are, your hand does shake a little bit, especially when you're holding something with any weight to it. Mm-hmm. You know, 1/50th of a second, 1/60th, you know, faster than that, you can probably do it free-handed, but you're going to have to compensate a lot to get your brightness back in it. A tripod is definitely the way to go, and, use a timer or a remote control if you can is even better.
Yeah. You definitely want to have the least shake possible. Yeah.
Right.
How about you, TFR Cool? What's your number one don't?
Number one would be don't use film and then just think that suddenly people can see it through the internet. But my actual number one don't in Transformers photography would be to don't get smug about it. Don't think that, you know, you know everything about Transformers photography, because, you know, through the thread and through everyone else, I've come very far in photography, because before Christmas, which is before I got my DSLR, I didn't know that much about photography itself. When I first began posting, for the longest time, I thought the highest ISO was the best. Yeah.
As we mentioned earlier, that is wrong. Yeah.
Yes. And so number one don't ever think you've you know everything. Don't ever stop learning about it, because I'm still learning.
Yeah, I mean, I had the same experience before I started with my DSLR, and especially with the light tent. Before that, I didn't really understand, like, the workings of a camera to be able to really make the adjustments correctly. For the first year I had my DSLR, I was using it on auto mode with a flash all the time, which, talk about a waste of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even in the intervening, like, 3.5 years now, you know, I've been learning how to do this better and better all the time, and I still don't think I have proceeded nearly as far as some of the rest of you have. And TJ especially is outpacing everybody in how fast he's learning.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, he came in about maybe even a week after receiving just a few tips. He came in and he was like, he posted like full white background, and he was like, hey, how do you do it? A week later, here comes TJ. Here comes his two Brutakai, and they're like full white background, and everyone's like, huh?
Where did this come from?
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I thought I learned fast, because when I got my DSLR, I basically learned everything I knew about photography in about 3 weeks.
Well, I think if you're an outsider and you come to one of these threads, and you look at, I think we've all learned from each other. And I think if you come to this thread as an outsider and just pour through it, you know, look through the threads, you almost think that it's a pissing contest. You know, it's a game of one-upmanship. You know, it's like, okay, this guy takes a really great picture, and then two or three posts down, this guy takes an even better picture, and you're like, and then the first guy takes another good picture, and you're like, okay, what are they doing here? But no, to be honest, I think it's the fact that we are learning from each other. We see what the other person does to a strength. And it's like, I've learned from TJ Duckett. I'm sure he's learned from me. I've learned from XV. I've learned from Sydney Y. I've learned from TFR Cool. I just try to implement everything that I've learned that I've seen in their pictures in mine. And maybe there's something that I've done in my pictures that other people pick up and use. You know, and you know, we help each other. It's not like I said, it's not like a pissing contest, which it may look like if you look on the board.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, you know, every so often there's some troll or some guy that, you know, has never posted in the board before, that, you know, we're all in a pissing contest against to see who takes the better photos. And some people are like, we're in a sucking of the certain body part contest, you know, bumping each other up. A lot of people, you know, I know, I don't know if y'all remember that, but some guy came in about a month ago and was talking about that, and all of us posted about it, that it wasn't actually that, and we all help each other, and, you know, he left the thread, but, you know, I'm hope he, you know.
Well, I mean, it's just the way you look at it. I can kind of see how someone would think that, you know. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, whenever I first came in the thread, I kind of thought that myself. You know, it's like, okay, everybody's, you know, kissing his hind end, and you know, yeah, he takes great pictures, but, you know, these other guys do too, and nobody pays attention to their pictures. Mm-hmm. It's not that. It's just the fact that he's using a technique or a camera or something that is presenting the photos in a really, really nice way, and everybody's appreciating that. And once I started understanding that and implementing that in my photos, then I'm like, you know, I just decided to jump in the fray. Hey, I don't care if people don't like my photos or not. Now I do. You know, I really want people to enjoy my photos as much as I do. I mean, or else I wouldn't post them. You know, it's not a vain thing. It's just, you know, why take a picture if you don't want anybody to see it?
Yeah. Right.
And see, that's there's something I like to say. If anybody out there is, you know, in that thread and, you know, in threads like that and they haven't been quoted necessarily, that doesn't mean people don't appreciate your pics, because I have looked at every single picture, and honestly, I've actually gone back to the ones I haven't seen, like in the cool stuff, the first version, the second version in 2009. I've gone back to all those and I've looked at every single post in the threads, just because, you know, seeing people progress and seeing how awesome the pictures are, it really does, you know, inspires a lot of people, and, you know, that's where a lot of people have come up. Most of us have come up by seeing pictures and then starting to take them ourselves.
Yeah.
I'll be fully honest here. I have to admit that, you know, I'll see somebody post a really cool picture and I'm like, okay, why can't I do that? And then I go and spend 100 more hours until I have done that. But I think that's a really good point, though. Anybody coming in new to this thread, don't be intimidated. Don't worry about it because you don't have a huge, expensive camera like some of us are blessed to have. You know, people can get a lot out of point-and-shoots. Some of our people here on the show right now are doing exactly that. And, you know, you don't need a hugely... Yeah, cell phone cameras even. You don't need a hugely expensive camera to take good pictures. You just need to put in a little time and a little bit of effort, and you will turn out good stuff. Yeah. It's not a monetary war any more than it is a pissing contest.
No, it's not.
Well, it's like anything. I mean, even with kit bashing, which we're planning to talk about next week on the show, you get out of what you put into it. If you try to do it quick, you know, just, okay, you take your camera, point and shoot. I want to take nice pictures, but I want to spend 30 seconds taking the picture. You're going to get those kind of results. But you put time into it, setting it up, working on your lighting, working on, you know, keeping other things out of the picture, you know, work on learning the settings on the camera, on the phone, you know, phone camera or whatever kind of camera you have. Yeah, you put the time into it, you're going to get better results, just like anything.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people like, you know, some people do get offended when their pictures aren't quoted, but really, I mean, some people do quote pictures, and usually it's the big names in the thread that get quoted, you know, like Sydney Y or, you know, some of us. But really, if I could quote all the pictures I thought would cool, there wouldn't be a single post with a picture that I wouldn't have quoted. But, you know, I've come to a thread that, you know, that has six pages of cool pictures that I haven't seen, and I quoted every single one of those. I snipped all the pictures, and still my quote was like half a page long.
Yeah,
it gets a little bit out of hand. I mean, with that, I think you have to be secure enough to assume that, okay, people are liking these because they're not saying anything bad about them, even if they're not actively saying something good about them.
Yeah.
You have to assume that the enjoyment is there.
No, and if news you're doing is it good for, news.
If you're doing it for any other reason than that, I think you're doing it for the wrong reasons. That's my opinion.
The only thing that really burns me up whenever people comment on a photo is, like, you can take a really great photo, but somebody looks at it and they just get hung up on the fact that you didn't flip a fin up or something on there. And you're like, really? For real? You know, you got a great photo and you're going to bitch about a little fin that's not flipped up. You know,
sometimes those are almost helpful, but when they are in that bitchy sort of tone, like, you know what, you transformed that wrong, you stink. You know,
well, it's not nice. It's not even that. You know, I mean, some people, to be honest, you know, I took a photo of the RTS Prime some time back, and I prefer the way the wheels look if you leave them out and up to the side, because it, to me personally, it gives it more of a G2 look to the figure. Now, officially, the wheels rotate down and they slide in. I took a photo of it the way I liked it, and I put it up there. And before anybody commented on how cool it looked, They're like, ooh, you didn't transform it wrong. You forgot to do this. You forgot to do that.
Actually, you know, I think I was the first person to comment telling you didn't put the wheels in.
Well, you're a dick anyway. But, you know, it's...
Side of that, I can see where a lot of times somebody might think they're helping you by pointing out something that you may have accidentally missed.
Yeah.
Right, because sometimes people miss a step in the transformation. They don't use the instructions because they're like figuring it out for themselves, and they just miss a step. And okay, so you try to help them.
What, flashback to Armada Starscream for a minute. No. For the first year I had that toy, I did not even realize that the wings flipped back for robot mode. I was leaving them level they were.
They flipped back?
Really?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Oh, crap, guys. I thought that was like the example I could come up with because I was doing it wrong and didn't even know for a year. And here we are 10 years later and you were doing it too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't have that mold anymore, but I don't recall them flipping back. I didn't know that.
No, I never. Yeah,
they do it so they stand straight up like, G1 Seeker wings.
Oh.
But for the first year...
Oh, I get what you mean. I thought you went back on a hinge. Okay,
me too. I was like, what?
Okay, bad choice of words. Sorry. I was leaving them untransformed in vehicle mode position where they're just flat across the top. For like the whole first year I had the toy, I didn't even know that. So, I mean, it could be a situation like that where they think, okay, maybe you just aren't aware that it does this or you accidentally forgot it. It's not always immediately obvious, okay, we're doing this intentionally because we prefer it that way, you know.
Yeah, you actually...
I can see both sides of the argument here, honestly.
Yeah. Somebody helped me out with Sentinel Prime because I didn't know there's a little panel on Leader Sentinel Prime from Dark of the Moon that flips out on the back of his legs and covers the space between the wheel and the panel that folds over, and now it looks a lot better.
Well, and okay, for a more current example, before the talk we had before the show tonight, I didn't realize that little Cyberverse hatchet here had a panel that flipped forward to cover in some of his open back cavity.
And I mentioned that, and you're like, wait a minute, what?
I was like, oh, hey, cool, it's not a big open space anymore, but oh, wait, I can't see the ribs in there anymore.
Yeah. until you told me about that, I didn't even know there was ribs and a spine down in there. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah. So we kind of helped each other out on that.
Yes, we did. Thank you.
Well, let's wrap up that segment, and we'll move on to the eBay item of the week. And this week is Hunt for Decepticons Teradive Prototype. Time now for our This week's eBay item of the week is Hunt for Decepticons Deluxe Teradive Prototype. Greg, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's pretty much as the title says. It's a Transformers Hunt for Decepticons Deluxe Teradive Prototype. Item number 1506-276-94864. Item location is China. Ships to pretty much anywhere in the world. Current bid is $100.99. It's had 10 bids as of this recording with 1 day and 1 hour to go. Or I guess it was when I first last loaded the page. You need to refresh it. Probably down to less than a day by now. No, it just says 1 day exactly. So I guess we've been headed up for about an hour. But yeah, it's the prototype of the Deluxe Teradive, and it's in some really funky colors. It's like bright red and bright green. It looks like it would fit into the G2 line very well.
That's what I mentioned earlier.
And then they gouged the face on it.
Yeah, I mean, the factories tend to do that. But I love test shots like this in wacky, random plastic colors. There is nothing I enjoy more than that.
And I love the teal trident that he has.
Yeah, it looks cool.
He has like a teal trident with...
And it's also clear.
Red. Yeah.
It's also clear.
Oh, it is, yes. I thought this auction was kind of pertinent since the Space Case repaint of this is now starting to hit shelves at Targets. And seeing this item on eBay kind of brings it a little more current. $40 shipping though, so if you was to win this auction right now, it's $150.
Yes, it's going to be shipped to you
for a deluxe
via first class. It's going to be served wine in a very fancy hand carved crystal glass, and also with a side of caviar.
Now if he came in a box, and I opened it up, and there was a pack of unopened peanuts, or I mean, a pack of open peanuts in there, and a little bitty half cup of drank soda. Then I knew he didn't fly first class, and I would be rather upset.
Yeah.
For that price, you better jump out of the box and sing happy birthday to me.
Yeah.
This really brings with back memories on. For me, too, of several years ago when wacky color test shots like this were more common. And one that stands out in my mind particularly is a Blast Punch Optimus Primal that was in solid pink plastic. Oh.
I never saw that, but I want to now.
Pinkimus Prime.
I have a picture of it somewhere. I don't think I have a picture of it online anywhere, but I did think to save a picture of that because how often do you see an Optimus Primal cast in solid pink?
If you don't mind, post that on the Geek Existence forums for the listeners to look at.
Yeah, if I can find it, I'll post it up somewhere because that deserves to be remembered.
Yeah, and kind of going back on the photo discussion, that's another thing too I've been doing with on the Geek Existence forums. I have a similar thread on there called the Cool Picks thread, and you can actually look at the first opening posts of that thread at some of my older photos, and then look at them in my newest photos, and you're like, okay, these are two different guys taking pictures. I mean, where it's such a new form and everything, you know. I mean, I just basically repost everything there, so you know, it's easy to go back and look.
It's very interesting to see how you progressed. I mean, your pictures didn't start off bad by any means, but they've just gotten so much. They're different, and they're better, but they're different in a good way. I like that.
I think with mine more, I try to go with emotion or thought, but you know, behind the pose. Now, yeah. I mean, I know G1s is a little bit hard. It's a lot harder actually. Whenever you do a G1, I think the Predacons was a triumph with that. You know, but you know, you try to make an action pose with the G1 blur, and you're going to get nowhere. You know, but still,
you can falling down.
Yeah,
you need a fast shutter for that, though.
but
a fishing line.
Yeah, but you can still appreciate the figure. Another thing that I've always tried to concentrate on with my photos is just the general overall beauty of the figure itself. You know, I mean, sometimes I don't take a picture to see for people to see. You know, look at this cool pose, and you know, sometimes I just want you to see. Like I took a picture of Ruination here a while back. I just think that's a beautiful figure. I like the colors on it, and I just wanted to take a straight up and down picture of it. You know, here it is. Look how pretty it is. You know, right. You know that's one thing. You know, a lot of people do differently in their photos. Some people aim for, you know, an action scene. You know, they'll Photoshop things into it, and you know, which is cool. There's I can't remember who it is right now, and we're rabbit trailing right now from Terra Dive, but
my fault.
But, well, it is a good point. There's somebody on TFW. I can't remember their name right now. It might even be Hard Return that does really good smoke effects.
No, that's Jazz Ed.
Jazz
Ed and the Korean dude are photoshopping a lot of stuff, and it looks really cool.
It does, and you know that's their thing. That's something that they like doing. Me personally, I think it's cool. I enjoy their photos, but I personally don't want to do that. You know, everybody has their own style. But let's get back off the rabbit trail here and get back onto Terra Dive. I know you mentioned, was it Greg that you mentioned the G2 color scheme look of it? I know the actual G2 Terra Dive was what, blue?
Yeah.
So, you know, I know when we were looking for the eBay, I'm having trouble saying eBay tonight. When we were looking for the eBay item of the week before the show, I know TFR Cool popped this up here, and that's the first thing that popped in my head was wow, it looks kind of like G2 colors. And I didn't mean that he looked like G2 Terra Dive in the fact that you know, the namesake, but you know, just that wacky color scheme. You're like, I want a wide release toy in those colors.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they. I mean, you know, even like
long live
G2 and stuff do that. But you know, I'd like to see some. You know, I'd like to see Hasbro or you know, it'd probably be Takara doing it because they cater more to, you know, they have parts of their company that cater more to collectors. But I'd love to see a mass release, not too exclusive if Takara Tomy did it, because I would not like to see $80 deluxes. No. But I'd like to see a mass release of like, just wacky color schemes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might cater more to fans in some ways, but I don't think that G2, as we remember it, is a especially popular thing in Japan. Because,
yeah.
I mean, one of the few representations of that they've done was the Revenge of the Fallen Mind Wipe and Skystalker set recolored as Smokescreen and Dreadwind.
I want those guys. So
well,
bad.
They also reissued Laser Rod Prime, too, or Laser Prime.
That's yeah. true, but they also got then an Ultra Magnus out of it, and the mold was already ready anyway because they had done Black Convoy a few years earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just a matter of taking the resources they had easily at hand, which, I mean, that's sort of a Takara trademark. If it's easy, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was convenient.
It was.
I've always wanted to see, like, a How It's Made episode, but just catering, you know, focusing on Transformers. I would really like to see that. Just something that I've always wanted to see.
Most definitely.
I've worked in a factory. It's not that interesting, and it really does not vary that much. I mean, there's differences in how different things are made, but when it comes to like plastic injection molding, it's all pretty much the same thing.
Yeah,
they cut a die, stick it in the machine, squirt it full of plastic, out come the parts.
Yeah, I worked
what's
in.
What's really interesting is the Bandai method, where they can actually inject different colors into one mold at the same time.
That's interesting how they can do that because, like you said, I worked in a factory at one time myself for Panasonic, and my specialty that when I worked there was on the metal stamping presses. However, I did do some work over in the injection molding department, which was right next door to mine, and the injection molding machine's there to see how it works. Imagine this really long gun with a screw in it. That's roughly the size of a car. At least these are the ones in this building were. And
there's a your mom joke in there somewhere, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or that's what she said joke.
Or a Cleveland show joke, yeah. But essentially the plastic would come in giant, like 50-pound bags of ground up pellets that almost look like rabbit turds. You know, and you would dump it into a hopper that would put it through a dryer, and then the dryer would feed it into another hopper on top of the injection molding machine. This is where it would be superheated to, you know, say 600-700 degrees, and this it would be shot down into a an area where there's this giant screw that forces it out this really tiny nozzle into the injection molding, and to get it to go out into, you know, through the sprues and fill in the mold. Now, you said Bandai had a way of injecting multiple colors into a mold. How they did that, knowing that, you know, that's kind of how most injection molding is done, is a feat. And
some kind of proprietary system that they've developed to do that. And I mean, nobody else has that ability right now.
It has to be two different injectors, and the molds have to be cut with two different compartments.
Yeah, but
either that, or they just know.
Well,
you know,
they would also have to have two injection screws.
That's what I mean. That's what I meant by two injectors. They'd have to have the thing just work. They can have one with one color, one with another. And if they didn't have the mold gated off, the other way to do it would be with settings to where each one's been squirted into the mold in a different place, you know, through channels and things it would go through to get there, and then just enough plastic to fill that one section only, so they wouldn't bleed through the other sections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Gundam kits that come out from this, where you will get a sprue where half of it's one color, half of it's the other color, and in the middle they're joined together like normal plastic. It's really amazing that they can do that.
Most definitely.
Yeah. But and if I mean, did something like that, I'd like to see, like, one, I know Takara Tomy's done some videos about how the design, how they design them, but I'd like to see, you know, from, you know, something like that from beginning to end, from design to actually, you know, cutting, having the molds made, and then to making them and packaging them. I just think that'd be something interesting.
Most definitely. TJ, what's your thoughts on the Hunt for Decepticons Deluxe Pterodive prototype?
To be honest with you, I don't know if you guys know this, but a lot of people on the board have seen my collection, stuff like that. I collect pretty much all classics. So even though that's towards the classics line, like the mold itself just isn't for me. It's a little bit too off. But I like prototypes in general. I like the clear plastic, honestly. It's one of those things where if I could get every movie toy as a prototype, I would. Mm-hmm. I just love the clear plastic and the off colors and stuff like that. Like you guys were saying, it just has that really G2 like crazy look, but it's still uniform at the same time. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's still the same mold breakdown. The sprues are what they are, and they'll all be filled with one color.
Yeah.
The only thing it needs is a little paint.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So TJ, how much would you pay for a prototype of the sidearm sideswipe mold?
Wow. To be honest with you, that mold's a favorite. Not going to lie. I don't know if you asked that just because you know that's the one movie figure
that I just love. Yes,
but I would pay a good $400 or $500 for that. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll put it out there. Yeah.
And see, if I had, unlimited access to other people's money,
and the things I could do if I had unlimited access to other people's money,
right?
Perfect
trips to Japan,
pay off my house,
hookers,
through that, tacos,
Asian hookers,
tacos.
Well, I believe that rabbit. I believe this rabbit trail needs to come to me.
Okay, one quick question, kind of relating to Pterodive before we leave this topic. We already know there's the Space Case repaint, but that's an exclusive using the new head. I'm kind of holding to the theory that that is just a convenient repaint using the head that already exists, and that the head is actually intended to be something else. Anybody have any thoughts on what they think it'll be?
Okay, there's several figures from, you know, Reveal the Shield and Generations that have alternate head sculpts, which when they were designed, they're just things that, like, Aaron Archer or one of the other designers doodled up and liked. They're not really supposed to represent anybody existing, and yeah, I think that's what's going on with Pterodive's alternate that Space Case uses, because there's nothing Space Case about that at all.
Right. You don't think it looks like any other character? It's just a generic head they made up because it looks cool?
Nothing comes to mind for looking like anyone else, you know. Like, we know specifically that Jazz and Lugnut have completely new design heads that aren't meant to represent any existing character. Whether it works that way when the remolds come out, you know, who's to say? It could be another Space Case situation.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay, well, I'm interested to see who those are.
Okay, who would you like to see Pterodive repaint? If we get another repaint with either head, any particular homage you'd like to see out of it? TJ, anything that you to buy it?
Pterodive, honestly, the closest that he looks like to me, just being more into G1 and stuff like that, is like a Thunderwing, and obviously we already have one. So off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything except maybe some of the Japanese victory figures and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But
and see, the thing is, when Pterodive came out and I first got it, the thing that immediately came to mind was, hey, recolor this as Space Case, and we already have that. So, the only other thing I can think of then is to do the same... Strafe.
Or Strafe, yeah.
Yeah, do the same thing G2 did and take the mold used for Space Case and make it into Strafe with really bad camo colors.
Yeah. The only thing I'm disappointed with Space Case is the fact that they did not transfer the grid pattern that, like, the G2 figure had. I wish the new Space Case had it.
But if you want to hold on the specifics of Space Case until we come to the Ouch My Wallet segment, I have thoughts on Space Case. We can.
Okay. Well, I believe that'll be a good segue there. Let's wrap up the eBay item of the week. If you're looking for it, the eBay item number, again, yes, I am, is 150-627-694-864. As Insane Galvatron said earlier, but we're repeating again since we kind of rabbit trailed there quite a bit. If you're looking for a great prototype of a nice figure in some really wonky colors, Humford Decepticons Deluxe Teradive prototype available now on eBay. Check it out.
Beautiful colors.
Now it's time for Ouch My Wallet.
All right, our Ouch My Wallet segment this week. We'll kick it off with XV. You were speaking about Space Case in the last segment. Want to continue on with that sentiment?
Yeah, I had planned on a trip to Nashville on Tuesday to hit every target I could. There's actually six of them around Nashville. But I was lucky, and on the very first target I hit, I was able to get somebody to pull the new exclusive assortment out of the back for me and got the first Space Case in the area.
Nice.
I have to say I was a little disappointed.
Oh.
Well, mine came with several factory defects. Not the least of which is that the spear is put together wrong, where head will not stay up or down in its proper mode. It kind of just bounces in the middle.
That's what she said.
Believe me, I'm aware of the possibility whenever I say anything relating to heads up, down, bouncing, etc.
Yeah, just like your mom.
Yes. But also, the hinge is put together wrong. If you turn that into a your mom joke, I'll be really impressed.
Your mom's hinge is put together wrong.
Okay, I'm less impressed than I thought I would be. So the shaft is bent. Shut up. And if you try to fold it, it feels like
the shaft is bent. Does it kind of curve to the right or the left?
Well, I guess it depends which way you're looking at it.
Can you fold it?
Can you turn it into a bender?
When you try to fold it, the hinge feels like it's going to tear apart.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Okay, that's degenerating quickly. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, put it back in.
Also, the tabs that hold the robot mode together tend to resist slotting in where they're supposed to go. And both arms fell off when I transformed it the first time.
Oh, no.
Oh, poor thing.
On the other hand, where Teradive had a tendency to do the splits when it was in robot mode, the hips are good and tight on Space Case, just like your mom. Beat you to it that time.
I'm actually holding my Teradive, and his hip joints are pretty tight.
Yeah, mine are too.
These ones are better than the first ones, but less common. But yeah, I mean, there's just a confluence of quality control issues on the Space Case I got, and I'm just not really happy with it. If I can get back to a target before these all sell through, I'll probably try to pick up a replacement. But for now, oh, did I mention it's two left feet?
Oh, no.
No.
Wow.
That's two left feet, literally.
It sounds like my BotCon Thundercracker with two left fists.
Oh, gee.
Damn, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And what's worse is he actually traded in a perfectly good BotCon Thundercracker that just had a little bit of paint smudge on it.
Well, the face, there was the whole forehead was smudged off. The gold paint was smudged off. You could see the plastic underneath. It was pretty distracting. And the guy at the table handed me one that was already open, so I assumed they checked it.
Like the third party recently, because they've had pretty good QC, but I digress until later.
I think having the paint smudged off the forehead is rather more glaring than having one wrong fist.
You don't look at the fists.
If Space Case's only problem was that it had the two left feet, I could probably deal with that, even though in vehicle mode, the one foot won't actually fold in all the way like it's supposed to because it doesn't have room. But, you know, if that's all it was, I don't think I'd care that much. It's just all these little things that come together and just make it not so fun anymore.
Yeah.
But, like Weird Wolf was saying, in the last segment, I really miss the dazzle camo pattern that the original Space Case had, and I really would like to see a Repro Label set come out to at least put some of that back. There's several panels on the back of Terradive's vehicle mode that are big enough, and they don't split up during transformation, that you could get quite a bit of that on there and cover up some of this really distasteful translucent plastic.
Oh, I love translucent plastic.
Yeah, I like translucent plastic, but on him, it's not a pretty color, because I think that a nice bright teal, bright blue translucent is nice, but this one is kind of milky.
If they could make a Repro Label set that had a translucent like grid pattern, I think that would be perfect. Yeah. Well, no, I mean you could do like the some of the G1s had. They had translucent stickers, so that's what I'd like to see for the Space Case.
I don't really have a problem with translucent plastic on its own, like used as an accent for one thing, but this is like almost all of the top of the vehicle mode is in translucent plastic. That's a little bit different.
Well, it surprised me. All those Target exclusives were like that. I thought they were just in those colors until at BotCon they were in the case, and they all had translucent plastic, which surprised me.
Well, and the Toys R Us exclusive Warp for Cybertron 3-pack that's coming out later, mm-hmm. those are redecoed in translucent plastic. Ooh. And the trans-scanning figures that Toys R Us has right now are partly clear plastic.
Yeah, I saw those. I want the Ironhide so badly.
My point, is that it's an unsettling trend for me. I hope that it does not become a habit to just crank out recolors, like same character recolors primarily, but just doing them in, clearer plastics. Because that's not really a selling point for me.
Yeah. I'd like to see a version of the Reveal the Shield Jazz Mold and some parts of it clear plastic. I think that'd be kind of cool. For some reason, I just think his mold just is...
I just want the Stepper repaint.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I really hope Hasbro does a version of that.
Yeah, because the Takara one is very expensive. Ugh.
Yeah, I can't pay the $80 plus whatever the book costs to get that.
Yeah, although one of the people on TFW, Cracker Jay, posted a few months ago a custom that he was working on, and then recently posted pictures of it again without mentioning it was a custom, and I thought it was the real deal.
I did too. I saw it, and I'm like, how did he get it so soon?
Well, if Hasbro does it, they could just update the flames like they did with Trax. That would differentiate from the Takara one.
That'd be fine. Plus, you have to remember, too, a Hasbro one would not come with Nightstick like the Generations book version will have.
They could do it with Cyclonus's Target Master.
Well, no, I mean, it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of how the cost breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can only have so many number of moving parts and so much material go into a specific toy to stay within the production budget.
The Nightstick would push it over. But there's a third-party company that, from my understanding, is working on some generic Target Masters. And
yeah, I mean, my only point with that was that it would be another way that it would be different from the Japanese version.
There's no gun?
Right. Or it would have Jazz's gun again.
Oh, you could always take your extra Cyclonus, because they've released it recently. Just use his extra Target Master, I mean.
I've got 4 Nightsticks sitting around all in different colors, so yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so besides Space Case, I got the Cyberverse Commander Hatchet, which we also mentioned briefly earlier. This was actually pretty interesting to me from the first time I saw it, because, there was Ravage in the Revenge of the Fallen line who didn't really transform into anything, and now we've got an animalistic transformer that actually has a real vehicle mode. And the same way I got the Legends Ravage and made it Dark Mount's little lap kitty, I think Hatchet's going to be Straxus's attack dog.
Mm, definitely, yeah.
But one thing I thought was really cool about Hatchet that I didn't know until I got it is in the body cavity where the head stores in vehicle mode, in the robot mode, when you look down in there, you can actually see molded in is a rib cage and a spine, which is just for the internal detailing. It's not like the backside of the chest or anything.
Hmm. Yeah, it's they actually did. I mean, the detailing inside the cavity, I mean, you really don't see it at all unless you're just specifically looking down in the cavity to see what it's in there. So, I mean, it's like unnecessary detail that they actually put in it.
Unnecessary, and that's my favorite kind of detail to find on the Transformer. Yeah. There's no need for them to have done that, but they did it anyway because it was cool. Those are the kind of little things that I just love in Transformers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like, what I picked up. I like his little details.
Have you noticed recently with car Transformers that a lot of them will have brake discs on their front wheels?
Yes. Yeah.
And even Wreck-Gar has that kind of detailing on him.
Yeah.
I mean, who would even think to look for that on a Transformer car or a motorcycle or anything?
Your mom. Yeah.
I mean, I would expect to see it on the more expensive lines, like the alternative lines did that, but
alternative kind of detailing.
Yeah, yeah, and the alternative ones, I enjoy the smaller versions of them, but it's definitely interesting to see that on a deluxe figure at that price point.
Right.
For those of you who haven't seen much of Hatchet, be sure to check out the Geek Existence Transformers review video on YouTube of Decepticon Hatchet.
Nice plug.
Yes.
Okay, so finally, we have what I would call a somewhat lucky find from this week.
I would call it genius find.
At one Ross I went to on my great hunt this week, I found buried under a pile of crap a lone poor wind charger in torn packaging. So
you should have bought a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I could have, but no. And actually, I had someone try to send me two wind chargers from England, and they have gone missing in the mail.
Oh, imagine that.
I believe we're in week 8 now for that. But yeah,
they'll show up tomorrow now that you found those.
Well, he was actually really cool about it and refunded the money I sent him for them. So thumbs up to you, Grufflock. But no, I mean, I'm glad now to have even found one wind charger, and especially happy that wind charger was not supposed to come with any accessories, because I would have had to worry about those being missing from the torn packaging. So I would say a $4 wind charger is an okay find, wouldn't you?
Okay. Yeah. Seeing as how some people gave 60 plus, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me how much people were willing to spend on wind charger before it started hitting in Marshalls and Ross and TJ Maxx, even for the brief window that it has.
Yeah, I've called all the all those type of stores in, not even just my area, because my area has zero of them.
Right.
But basically all the stores in the whole state of Florida. And
you called them all?
Yeah. Yeah. I spent a day just calling them, just looking for figures that I didn't have. Just the
to be a teenager again, have that kind of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually remember doing that when I was that age.
I called the
don't we all sound old?
I could. But I you know, was looking for one lug nut, and then I was looking for the Reveal the Shield and the Generations one that I missed out. And one of them had Reveal the Shield, Generations, and a few of them like that. But all the rest of them, they were bare of any of the ones I wanted. None of them had Wind Charger or lug nut or any of those guys.
Wait. Well, you know, I was hoping to find a grapple while I was at it, but no such luck.
No, grapple.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He's French now.
Yes. Grapple. He can't let mud flap.
Well, mudflap was just French Canadian.
He was mud flap. TJ, how about you? What did you pick up this week?
I got Energon Devastator, Classics Megatron, Energon Shock Blast, Music Label Soundwave, Cybertron Metroplex, and Beast Wars 2 Leo Convoy.
Ooh.
Now, would I be safe to assume that at least a couple of those are for kit bashing purposes?
Yeah, the Energon Shock Blast is actually my third. I'm working on a custom or whatever with it. I already have done two custom Shockwaves or whatever, but this one's going to have a little bit of a twist. It's going to be his brother, so kind of a fanfic and stuff like that, and it's pretty cool. And I got to give credit to another poster, Satomi Blood. He really helped me out with some ideas for it and even the name for it, so it'll be pretty cool, and look out for that.
Shockwave.
Astro Magnum.
No, Shockwave. He's the great repaint that was released by Radio Shack.
Yes, I know.
Oh, nice.
Astro Magnum sounds like something your mom would use, XV.
Yeah. Make sure the batteries are charged.
And now, not exactly for whatchamacallit, kit bashing, but this is my second Devastator 2. So I'm going to go ahead and sell this one. And normally, I see it selling on eBay for like $140. So I figured I'd just go ahead and sell it for $75 shipped. I'd make half my money back that I spent on these.
They will be beating your door down, DJ.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and put it in my buy, sell, trade thread.
I'm just surprised that you haven't got any more third-party items.
I'm pretty much, besides everything that's out, or coming out, I'm pretty tapped, you know. I recently, like a month ago or whatever, went ahead and got the TAW God Swords for Ultra Magnus and Nemesis Prime. So that about finished up my Perfect Effect. And then, like, Shadow or Fans Project, every single thing that they've made, minus that cannon or little blaster for the Alternity or Alternators Optimus or whatever, I literally own every single piece that they've even made now.
Yeah, you were lucky to find the Cliff Jumper upgrade for not $300.
Yeah, that was one of those ones where I pounced on it. Like, I probably sent him a PM within 5 seconds of him posting that thread.
Yeah.
And even posted PM'd or whatever. And after that, I swear, my inbox probably got a good 10 messages from pissed off people. How did you find this before me? I don't know.
Just lucky, I guess.
Yeah, it was just one of those scenes where I don't really search the buy, sell, trade forums a lot because I've really winded down on my spending and found a lot that I'm looking for. But I just randomly saw it, and he had literally like just posted it that minute. So I was like, I'm on this.
Yeah, I had a similar experience a month or two back with somebody selling at retail cost Power Core Combiner, Skyhammer, and Heavy Tread. I just kind of stumbled on the thread minutes after it was posted. And now I have a Heavy Tread and Skyhammer.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, TJ, what do you think? Have you had a chance to open the Lyle Convoy?
Yes, and I love it. I do. I'm used to more of the Classics articulation. I love the look of this thing, but the top side, a little bit bulky. But it's still posable and stuff like that. The head is just a little bit, I would say, outdated.
Yeah.
I wish it was a little bit more dimensional, because I don't know if any of you guys own it, but if you like look at it from a profile view, his face is really flat.
Mm-hmm. I used to have the Flash Lyle Convoy, the translucent one.
Yeah, I had the regular one. I had the regular one and sold it in the big purge of 2008.
So definitely not bad. I'm glad to have another Optimus, because that's one of those ones where, as I've been building, I just happen to notice, like, now I have, I don't know, 10 different molds of Optimus Prime. Same with Megatron, too. But it's just random, but I just happen to keep getting these particular characters in hauls that I get and stuff like that. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to try to complete out the Optimus shelf a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think it's really cool when you look at people's collections and they have, like, one shelf that's just dedicated to one figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm not allowed to buy or trade or sell over the boards just because of, you know, I guess my
age.
Age, but.
And your mom.
My mother, yeah, privacy wise, I guess she doesn't want people knowing our address because I'm going to be raped by some guy dressed as Rapido.
Yeah, don't worry. Nice. We all went through that at one point or another.
Yeah, but
being raped by a man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Happened.
No,
to be
being raped by a robot. Rapido is a robot. Remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hydraulic
but,
action.
I wish I could do you know, deals over the boards, because really, I mean, I you can pay less for, you know, retail on, you know, boxed figures. I mean, it's pretty, you know, people are very fair out there. I mean, there are some people that jack up their prices because they're what's in style now, but there are some very nice people that go out and get the rare stuff and then, you know, sell it to you at retail.
Mm-hmm. You know, TJ, you were mentioning there about people that have a shelf that's dedicated to one figure and everything. You know, that reminds me, I don't know if everybody here remembers him, but there was a poster that used to be on TFW years ago. He was a huge fan of Optimus Prime and Optimus Prime molds, and he had every kind of Prime you could think of. And he had them loose, he had them sealed, and to see his collection, I mean, it was like almost nothing but Primes.
Elvin Pina. He even had the like gold Lucky Draw Masterpiece Prime.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I mean, he sold all of his Primes. And I think he said, I saw him at BotCon. I think the last BotCon he went to was one in Cincinnati, I think.
And what year was that?
08.
I believe it was 08, yeah. I asked him, you know, because he was just coming as a fan. He had already sold all of his collection, and he just basically wanted to come see all of his friends, online friends again, and say bye. And I asked him, I said, if you don't mind me asking, how much did you get out of, like, the lucky draws and stuff? And he said quite a substantial amount. I mean, it was in the thousands.
I heard he paid off his house when he sold everything.
Yeah. And he and his collection was probably 98% Primes.
Nice.
And
wow.
So, yeah, I mean, whenever you mentioned that, Elvin Pena really came to mind. And, you know, he was a great poster, too. I miss him. Let's see here. Did you get anything else?
No, that summed it up for this week.
Okay, well, let's move on to
this week.
Yeah. Insane Galvatron, what did you pick up?
I didn't get a whole lot this week. I picked up the Creo Prime, the large one. Mostly just out of curiosity. As a kid, I loved Legos, and so I wanted to kind of see these official Transformer ones. It looked a lot better than the Built to Rule. I'd heard good reviews, and, you know, that's the only one that tempted me because I love tractor trailer Transformers, and so that's the one I wanted the most. But it was $60, and I didn't really want to buy it for that kind of money. But then I got a Toys R Us members card thing in the mail that had a 20% off coupon, and I was like, score, $12 off, I'll hit that, and
yeah,
so
nice.
I picked it up. Yeah. Also, I'm one of those people that don't play a lot of video games, but I really wanted to play Dark of the Moon for PS3. I wanted to play it before I saw the movie, but it didn't get here in time. But I don't play that often. I usually wait till games go on sale as greatest hits or whatever. If I pay more than $40 for a game, I'm really wincing. I don't like to do so. So I hit up eBay and got the game sealed and new for $39 shipped. Nice. That showed up this week. And then the last thing I got was my Shapeways order for the Classics Slipstream head that I rendered based on White Mocha's Digibash.
Hmm. Interesting. I can't wait to see that.
So how much do you regret that Dark of the Moon game?
Well, I haven't played it yet, honestly. Like I said,
oh,
I don't play
okay.
that often.
I spoiled the ending for you.
Well, I heard it's not that great of an ending, but, you know, I love War for Cybertron. The play controls are a lot the same. So I'm sure, again, not being a huge gamer, it doesn't take that much to impress me.
This is
so
somebody who sets it on easy and plays it that way.
Yes, I play War for Cybertron
on
easy just because
I
want to go through. Yeah.
Amen.
So
I cheat, too.
Well, I do if I can figure out how. I don't cheat on online play because I think that's kind of douchey. But I do cheat on the campaign if
I
can.
I don't do online play anyway.
You should try Call of Duty.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
You talk about douchebag central sometimes.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know how people can have a kill death ratio of over 100-1 when they've only played for 12 seconds. But.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of my kill death ratio of 1.09 right now. I've worked hard for that.
1.94.
Kiss my butt.
1.94 try hard.
Kiss my butt.
But since this thread was about photo, or this podcast is about taking pictures for the photo thread, yes, a thread. We're recording a thread. Nice. I'm going to try to get that Slipstream. I ordered it in the white as well as the black, so the black doesn't need any painting except for the face. I'll try to get that on a Cyclonus body and get some pictures in the next day or two.
Nice. I'll
look forward to it.
You know what? Insane. If you wouldn't mind, do you do custom casting?
I have, but it's been a while. That's what's what I'm going to do with the Slipstream head. I'm planning to clean it up and try to smooth it out and then make some casts of it.
The
first time I got into casting, and I didn't do it a whole lot after that once some of these other parties released some, you know, actual chrome plated ones, but I was doing long stacks for Masterpiece Prime back when that toy was released. I bought the Takara one, and there were a lot of people waiting to get the US version, but they weren't happy with the short stacks. So I actually bought the Takara one, took it apart, cast the stacks, and then I probably sold 30 or 40 pairs online.
Nice.
And then, like I said, I think Ages 3 and Up released a chrome plated pair after that, so I quit.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is just cast, and if anybody's listening who does custom casting or anything like that, I'm looking for a cast of the Shadow Commander sword for the, the Shockwave custom that I'm doing. I kind of want to go with him and his brother. I don't know if you guys are in anime or anything like that. I'm going to give them each a sword in their colors, kind of like the Tetsuaga and the other one from Inuyasha or whatever. They each get their own special swords, special powers, yada yada. But it's just a really... It's going to come out good. I'm not trying to sound overconfident or anything like that, but I just need the MFN sword to be cast. I went ahead and sent it over to a guy from Pearl Customizers, and he's having the hardest time in the world because he says it's so thin and it has so many angles.
Right.
Yeah, that sword does have a lot of stuff on it.
Yeah, so. I mean, I wouldn't care to give it a shot. I kind of had issues with air bubbles because I don't have a vacuum chamber for casting. Which I know we're kind of bleeding into what could go into next week's podcast.
Try to save it too.
for clear plastic, you need a vacuum chamber because you're going to get air bubbles either way. The solid plastics that I use, you don't need an air chamber. You just got to make sure that it flows into every nook and cranny. And so I worked on some techniques to minimize the amount of wasted parts I cast because of air bubbles. So I think I could probably cast it as long as you don't want clear plastic.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to paint it anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about it later, but I think I could probably help you out. If he's that not works. Able to do it, you can get the sword back.
Thank you for the thought, even, sir.
Awesome. Well, I'll move on to my Ouch My Wallet segment here. I did a little, I had to do some errands today. I was looking for a CPU fan and literally went all over town looking for one and wound up getting a CPU fan at a Radio Shack, which, you know, I have a Radio Shack within a mile from where I live, but, you know, that was my last resort, and I really didn't want to pay.
And well, it should be.
Yeah. I really didn't want to pay three times the price, but, you know, hey, it was only $12, so. Yeah. But while I was around town, I did find some good deals, and I picked them up. First off, I found the Cyberverse Prime with trailer at Target. Gave $12 for it on sale. Haven't opened it yet, I don't know if I will or not. I might, I guess. I don't know. I kind of want to display it in vehicle mode. I picked up Alternator's Roll Bar at a comic shop for $14, plus tax. And he's 100% complete and pretty nice shape. And also at Walmart... the last place I went to, they had a 4x4 out in the aisle with Creos on them. And I picked up the small Creo Prime, not the big $60 one that Greg got. I got the small one that is more reminiscent of Classics Prime and gave $7.97 for him. And they also had the Walmart exclusive Deluxe Prime there, and I picked that up.
How is that guy?
I haven't opened any of them yet. Literally, I got home and I got on Skype with you guys, so I haven't had a chance to open them.
If memory recalls correctly, I don't think anyone's posted them in a battle with Bone Crusher yet, so you should do that.
In a battle with Bone Crusher. I don't have Bone Crusher anymore. So.
Well, shoot.
Yeah, bang. And the last thing I picked up at the same Walmart, and it was the first time that I had seen it, And the only reason I wanted it is because it seemed like a classic Target Master to me, was the Human Alliance Tailpipe and Pinpointer. Who doesn't want a crotch rocket with a Target Master? So, you know, I'm like, that's pretty awesome, so I went ahead and picked him up. So, that's my Ouch My Wallet for this week. Unless anybody else can think of anything, we'll move on to our final segment.
XV, I heard you biting your tongue. Are you sure you don't want to make the joke?
What?
Sounded like you were biting your tongue, or somebody was there somewhat laughing about the crotch rocket. There was an obvious your mom joke there.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's too obvious, I just don't go for it.
Oh, okay.
It's no fun that way.
I had an interesting pickup this week. It's a third-party product, but it's not out yet. They're releasing it to come out, but one of my friends over the boards actually lives near me was making it, and I got it for free. I paid $0, and, you know, it's a wonderful figure, but it's just not a...
It's Nada. Wow.
Yeah.
I've heard that thing's super poseable, too.
Yeah, you can breathe it. You can actually, like, literally inhale it.
You can eat it. Like, it's the first edible Transformer as well.
Yeah.
Digestible.
Yeah. But
you can't wipe your butt with it, though.
Actually, you can, occasionally. It's a matter. It never goes away because it never...
existed.
If you consume it or anything, it just never actually... takes a chunk out of it. Awesome. It stays as is.
And it looks a whole lot like pocket lint when you set it on a table.
If anything, it's like a hole. The more you take away, the bigger it gets.
I believe that's the underlying principle of your mom.
Yeah. The underlying principle of this whole podcast.
The more we take away from it, the longer it becomes.
Yes. Our final segment here, we're just going to talk about one thing in it because we're running a little bit long and everything. But I do think it is of note because, you know, I mean, we've been hearing about the fans project Hercules, which is the
TF Club, actually.
I'm sorry. The TF Club Hercules, which is their take on the Constructicons. And those guys are supposed to be around, I guess, Voyager size. So they're going to be like ginormous when they're combined and super expensive. I mean, what are the projections of the finished product? Around $700-$800?
About $600. They're about $100 a piece, so it'd be about $600 bucks.
So quite pricey. I'm sure it's going to be a great looking figure. I would really love to have one, but. There is going to be another option, and it will be Make Toys. It's a new company, I guess, called Make Toy. They're calling their version Giant.
Creative.
Yeah. We got Hercules and Giant. Mm. Anybody have a comment on the prototype that we've seen?
I just want to comment on the names.
It's very Devastator looking.
Yes.
I think it's just unusual that the, you know, one is called Hercules and the other is called Giant, but it, you know, the bigger one is not the name Giant. The names are backwards.
Well, I think Giant's just kind of like trying to overcompensate.
Oh, is that what it is? Kind of like calling a fat guy tiny?
Yeah.
So what are you saying, Greg?
Well, I'm just saying the names are backwards. The TF Club one should be called Giant because it's bigger.
So am I.
That's not what she said.
Well.
Well, I guess that'll do it for this week's episode of Geek Existence Transformers. Wow, what was that?
Oh, sorry.
I was waiting for that to happen all night.
Somebody knocked over their microphone. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, a special in-depth discussion about Transformers photography. We hope that you got some, yes, we hope that you've got some great info out of it. Also, be sure to check out our Geek Existence Gadgets and Tech podcast hosted by Kelly McCuddy and Daryl Keithley. It's a new podcast. They've started it up. The second episode just posted, I believe, yesterday. So if you're into cool gadgets and tech, check them out. They have a pretty entertaining podcast. I enjoy that. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, as well as YouTube. We have unboxings and reviews on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. And also check out our forum. We have our website up, and It's a new board. There's not a lot of posters right now, but you know, it takes posters to make posts. So if you'd like to join up and discuss things that we talk about on these podcasts or just chat in general, join up on our forums and have a good time. So without further ado, we're going to try next week to have a kit bashing episode about Transformers and have some guests on with that. TJ, I know you mentioned that you were doing some kit bashing. Would you be interested in joining us next week?
You know what? I'll not only come back, but I'll actually be on time this time.
Awesome.
How about that?
Awesome. We'd love to have you. We'd like to thank XV Braun from Radio Free Cybertron. We've appreciated you coming here, and we hope that you'd like to come back sometime.
Well, I had a great time, and I would love to come back next time there's a topic I can intelligently discuss.
Any Transformers topic would be easy to discuss. And as
especially if it's got to do with your mom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes, when you have your mom special, definitely give me a call.
Awesome. And last but not least, TFR Cool, thank you for being here. We had you last week, and I hope you enjoyed this this sitting in. Hope to have you back again, too.
Thank you very much. I'd like to come back, and if I could, like to, you know, come back next week. I mean, I haven't done any kid bashing or anything, but just listen in and absorb,
well,
and maybe I'll have a new hobby.
You're like me. I mean, I've tried kit bashing. I'm very poor at it. So I really don't know how much input. I'd say Greg will probably be more the host on that one. I guess having two green guys on there talking about it too would help to the discussion. So, yeah, feel free to come back.
And one thing I want to say, I hope you guys really do get a chance to reach out to, like, maybe a Frenzy Rumble, Son of Nemesis. You know, a lot of really amazing artists are on TFW that I've gotten a chance to learn a lot from myself. So even though I can come on there and answer questions, I would love to just sit and listen to what they have to say too.
Definitely. I know.
Right.
Go ahead, Greg.
We can't really name any names as of now. I've talked to a couple of people. One guy is definitely interested, but you know, we're not sure about the scheduling. His access to a computer with a microphone isn't really all that flexible, so we'd have to pretty much move the recording to a whole other night to get him on here, which I would like to do if we could, but. You know, and I'm still waiting to hear back from a couple other people. So I don't want to name any names yet because we haven't gotten any commitments, but we're working on trying to get some of the more, talented kit bashers on here.
Well, if we have to be a little bit flexible with our recording, we can. And if we are late with our podcast next week, that will probably be the reason why. But thank you again, each one of you, for joining us this week. And we hope you've all enjoyed this episode of Geek Existence Transformers, episode number 31. We'll see you next time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Bye now.